from New Orleans, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Every childhood has a soundtrack. Songs that played in the house, in the car, on the playground, at church, or after school. Professional musicians can almost always recount the songs they learned as children, and we'll hear from many of them, including Irma Thomas, John Cleary, and Terrence Blanchard. Ricky Lee Jones learned Ragtime Cowboy Joe when she was 8 years old. All these years later, she can still bring it home.
That he's a rootin' tootin' highfalutin' son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy. Ragtime cowboy Joe.
I remember it.
Musicians remember the songs of youth. After the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Some memories are hard to forget, like your first telephone number or a first kiss. For musicians, the songs they learned as children stick with them well into adulthood and often inform their musical appetites. Irma Thomas is the undisputed soul queen of New Orleans, but her childhood predates soul music. Thomas remembers those early years listening to the radio.
My father's family strung all up and down Highway 51. I have relatives starting, well, from New Orleans all the way up as far as Greensburg, Louisiana, that I know of are my father's immediate cousins and aunts and uncles that are still living.
Yeah.
When my parents couldn't find a good babysitter in New Orleans, my father took me to live with his mom. And within 6 months after he brought me to live with his mom, she died. So I stayed on with his sister who had four kids at the time.
Wow.
So I didn't have a chance to be spoiled. It wasn't until I came back to the city to live back with my parents when I was 9, because I told my dad if he didn't come get me, I was going to come back home myself. But he came and got me, and I came back to the city, and at that time, it was the early stages of what they call rock and roll. You know, the early Lloyd Price stuff, and
yeah.
Fats Domino, and Professor Longhair, and people of that caliber.
What more can I do?
Cry, even ashamed. My tears feel like rain. Even ashamed, you're the one to blame.
Boys call me Dr. Professor Longhair. The girls all call me a little old loving man. Oh, the boys call me Dr. Professor Longhair, but the girls all call me a little old loving man.
And on the radio, every day you had your gospel show, you had your blues show, you had the news, of course, and then you had, what was the other one, pop music.
Right.
And so you had a lot more music involved. And my dad was a big Percy Mayfield and B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland fan. So on the weekends when he was off, he played all those records. So that's where my musical background came from.
Well, you know I know I'm not a doctor, baby. But I wouldn't advise you to try to prove I'm not a doctor's son. Yes, you know I'm not a doctor, baby. But I wouldn't advise you to try to prove I'm not a doctor's son. Well, I'm gonna stay right here. That is until the doctor comes.
And even though you had some influences who were female, that most of your strongest influences have been male.
Well, I mean, Ruth Brown was out there, Dinah Washington, but Dinah was in a totally different category. She did more of the jazzier stuff. and mm-hmm. but they didn't call it so much jazz back then, or did they? They may have, I don't know. But I wasn't drawn to that style of music. Mahalia Jackson was in her heyday when I was growing up, so of course the gospel side of me was there. And then we had the Clara Ward Singers, the Five Blind Boys.
Right.
All of those were very influential in my gospel side. But B.B. King, early B.B. King, Lightnin' Hopkins, John Lee Hooker, these are the things you heard, and children are influenced by what they hear. And of course, my dad played all that stuff at home on his 78s.
I've got a sweet little angel. I love the way she spread her wings. Y'all's got a sweet little angel. I love the way she spread her wings. Y'all's when she spread her wings around me. I get y'all.
But the thing is, you know, because you have that rural and urban background, mm-hmm. you, I mean, you heard country music. And there are a lot of black people today, for instance, who say they don't like country music.
I love it.
I
do, too. Some of it, you can't tell the difference between it and rhythm and blues.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I learned that the early Gene Autry, when you said it, you know, when I started watching TV.
Yeah.
You know, you had Gene Autry, you had Roy Rogers, whom I met at my first Grammy nomination party.
Really?
I was like a little kid. I have a picture with him, so you know, I was like a little kid. But yes, I mean, the early songs, all the singing cowboy stuff, sure. My first performance as a child that I can remember singing, actually remember performing in a play, I was in either the second or third grade, I don't remember, but Miss Clovis Hurst was the teacher, and it was her version of Cinderella. Now, don't ask me how, but somewhere in Cinderella sung Tennessee Waltz. So I don't know if I was a fairy godmother or who, but she had me singing Tennessee Waltz.
Wow.
So, you know, we're talking the early, late 40s, early 50s.
Maybe Cinderella is from Tennessee.
Who knows?
Ooh,
but that
yeah.
was her version of Cinderella, so she had me singing Tennessee Waltz. Until this day, I remember Tennessee Waltz.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was waltzing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced him to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. I remember the night and the Tennessee Waltz. Now I know just how much I have lost.
Gotta love the Tennessee Waltz. Roy Rogers was one of Irma Thomas's musical heroes growing up. And this week, we're talking with musicians about the songs they heard as children. Mashiya Lake is a recording artist with a particular knowledge of blues songs from the first half of the 20th century. But Lake's earliest musical memory comes from Nashville, by way of the Upper Midwest.
The music began in South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Because that's where we were living when I was 9, when I began. My parents had divorced, and my mama was going out looking for a new husband and would take me and my sister along to this place called the Elk Creek Steakhouse and Lounge that housed the South Dakota Opry. And they had a singing contest one night. It was all grown-ups and very, very sincere, you know. They were very serious about it. And so they thought it was really cute when I was like, well, I want to be in the singing contest. I've had 3 Shirley Temples. I'm ready to go. And I got up and sang Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline. And, well, they were quite surprised about the sound that came out of this little tiny redheaded girl. So I won the contest. I won $500.
Not bad.
Yeah. And then they gave me a job. And I sang 2 songs every Saturday night, and I got paid $25 a song.
Well, okay, you know, truth be told, you're still a little redheaded girl, okay? So
I haven't grown much since then.
I don't think you have, right? But you know, we're going to have to ask you if you can sing a little bit of the song for us, Walking After Midnight.
Oh, sure. I have to do a cappella, though.
That's fine.
That's all right. I go out walking after midnight, out in the starlight. Just like we used to do, I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles out on the highway. That's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. Is that good enough, or you want me to go to the bridge? I could do the bridge.
Do the bridge!
I stopped to see a weeping willow crying on his pillow. Maybe he's crying for me. And as the skies turn gloomy, night winds whisper to me, I'm lonesome as I can be. I go out walking after midnight, out in the starlight, just hoping that you'll be somewhere out walking after midnight, searching for me. That was the slide at the end.
That's Mashiya Lake with a version of the Patsy Cline hit, Walkin' After Midnight. This is Music Inside Out, and we're talking with Louisiana musicians about the songs they learned as children. As it turns out, Irma Thomas and Mashiya Lake both came up listening to country music. After the break, Terrence Blanchard slams the door on opera, but it opens right back up again. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. The songs that musicians hear as children often inform what they create as adults. And this week, musicians are talking about the soundtracks to their childhoods. Tom Sankton is a journalist and musician who spent his youth playing clarinet with the original members of the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. He documented those years in a 2006 memoir and still plays traditional jazz in and around New Orleans. But Sankton, whose father was a journalist and author, says that his childhood home sounded more writerly than musical.
Sounded like a manual typewriter. when I was very young, I would go to bed, actually go to sleep in his bed, and he worked in his bedroom. And I would hear the clatter of his Underwood number 5 typewriter until I went to sleep. It was my lullaby. Maybe people today don't really know what that sounds like. The younger people, they know what a computer keyboard sounds like.
I think you can get an app that can make your computer sound like an Underwood.
Well, that's what the sound was in our household. We're talking about now the mid to late 50s and early 60s. My sisters loved Elvis Presley. They loved the Platters. And that was the kind of music they listened to. My mother listened to opera. My father was not somebody who would go to the record player and just sit down and listen to music, although he loved it. He was very busy during those years working on his novels.
Oh, got the magic touch. It makes me glow so much. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. Oh, when I feel your touch.
That's the world I first remember.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
You didn't think you wanted to be a musician as a youngster until you heard George Lewis, the great clarinetist, play.
Yeah.
And I'd love it if you could give us a little reading from your book.
Sure.
When you describe that,
yeah,
that moment.
Let me see, page 54, yeah. I don't know if I'd ever felt passion before, that pulse-churning excitement that makes you want to possess a thing, to fuse with it and have it fuse with you, that makes that thing seem greater and more wonderful than any other thing in the world. That's what I felt for the sound of George Lewis's clarinet.
And you were 13.
13, just turned 13.
And had just been exposed to passion, or at least right, realized that passion could come out of you.
I don't think I'd ever felt that just all embracing desire for something.
And so do you remember what George Lewis was playing at the time?
Oh, yes, very well. He was playing his famous composition, the Burgundy Street Blues. And it was his iconic tune. And I say composition, I don't think he ever wrote down a note of music, but he must have recorded it 50 times. It was just angelic. The sound of his clarinet was angelic. The tone, the soul, the spirit. And I was just enthralled by that. It was soul and spirit and something almost holy in some kind of non-sectarian sense.
Was George Lewis, who tutored a young Tom Sankton on clarinet. Sankton spent his childhood in New Orleans, where he heard opera, Elvis Presley, and the Platters at home, behind the rat-tat-tat of his father's typewriter. This is Music Inside Out, and we're devoting the hour to songs that many of our musical guests heard as children. Terrence Blanchard is a jazz trumpeter, band leader, and composer. But when Blanchard was a child, growing up in New Orleans, his father controlled the record player.
I've known him all my life as Oliver Joseph Blanchard.
Oliver Joseph.
And the day that he passed, when we got his birth certificate, it said Joseph Oliver Blanchard. It's one of those Louisiana stories.
You know, when I did notice that you have like a little company or something that you call Oliver.
Joseph Oliver.
Joseph Oliver.
Music.
Music. And I thought that it was related to Joe King Oliver.
I know a lot of people.
You know what I mean? The great cornetist,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
And but no, that's your dad.
It's my dad.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. And so your dad was a baritone singer, mm-hmm, loved opera. Mm-hmm. What kinds of operas did he love to listen to at home?
All of the classics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Carmen.
Carmen.
Yeah, definitely.
Bizet.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
that was probably, you know, one of the most played recordings in the house. And I remember my dad had those old RCA Victor recordings.
Yes, records, you know, the heavy ones.
Yes, exactly. That we weren't allowed to touch.
No.
No, yeah. You would hear door slamming in the house because, you know.
Nobody wanted to hear it.
Yeah, because everybody was like, oh, there he goes. Boom, you know, boom. It was pretty funny.
And so your mom, I mean, was she a particular music lover as well? What kind of music did she like?
No. My mom loves spiritual music, and my mom loves music in general.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a miracle that I have musical talent. And she knows. You know, my mom is sweet, and my father made sure I put my mind towards music.
Smart man. What did he do for a living?
My father sold insurance by day
mm-hmm.
and worked as a hospital orderly at night.
Really?
Yeah, he had two jobs, and he was very devoted. You know, I mean, my father was a workaholic. You know, he would come home, and he would literally go to bed and sleep for a few hours and then get up and go to work at night, and he did that every night. And my dad was brilliant with numbers. He used to have these little number games we would play as when I was a kid, you know, and he just had that type of mind. One of the things that we always used to do as a father-son thing, before he would go to work at night, he would wake me up and we'd watch The Honeymooners.
Norton, don't you have to go upstairs and have supper?
I already had. Well, aren't you going to be a little uncomfortable sitting here watching Alice and I eat?
Oh, thank you, Ralph. You put it that way, huh? I'll be glad to say. All right, now, I'll have a little order of spaghetti and meatballs, light on a marinara, heavy on a shoot, one with a feather in it, hold a meal.
And then I'd have to go to bed, and then he'd go to work.
You and your dad in the Honeymooners.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a great moment.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Well, so, you know, have there ever been any songs that you have composed yourself with your father in mind?
Just about my entire career.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when I started working on the opera, I kept him close to me, you know, and the entire time in my heart, at least, you know. And I remember before he passed, one of the biggest thrills that I could have ever gotten and given him was the first time I worked on a film with Spike Lee. We were doing Jungle Fever.
Yes.
And I got a chance to fly him up to New York and have him come to one of the sessions. You know, forget that I was scared to death because it was my first film. But, you know, we walked into the studio and it was a huge thing for him to see, you know, a 60-piece orchestra. And then for some of it, we had the Harlem Boys Choir there, too.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great gift to give your dad.
It was nice. He was thoroughly impressed.
That was Terrence Blanchard. Despite all the door slamming when he was young, Blanchard wrote his own opera in 2013 called Champion. We're talking with musicians about the songs they heard as children. It takes exposure to a wide variety of musical genres to create Louisiana's unique musical landscape, from opera to Elvis, and from Roy Rogers to reggae. Singer-songwriter David Egan writes soul ballads that have been recorded by Irma Thomas, Percy Sledge, and Joe Cocker, among others. Egan says he wants his songs to pack the same kind of emotional catharsis as the music he heard growing up in northern Louisiana.
I was raised in a symphony family.
What is that?
An opera singer mom. An attorney dad who adored every move that she made and would pitch in and be vice president or treasurer or some kind of officer of the Shreveport Symphony growing up. So, there were always guest conductors and ballet dancers and Philippine guitar troupes and opera singers and you name it, staying at the house, cast parties till 4 o'clock in the morning on school nights. There was always an atmosphere of tolerance and wonderment, eccentric characters everywhere. that's what a symphony family is.
Exactly.
A lot of people really take some cheap swipes at opera.
They're crazy. They're crazy.
Yeah. Because that's some heavy stuff. And what I'm getting at is the element of catharsis.
Okay.
When the music and the words and the pure emotion works to a point where it just makes you kind of have an overflow of emotion as a listener. Outpouring of emotion happens in opera and musical theater, but it also happens in rock and roll and blues. And so having grown up in the opera and musical theater, that's an element that I always go, it's a standard, which I cannot always hit, but it's something that I like to go for in a song, in a soul ballad or whatever.
That's very interesting what you're saying, because in a way you're relating what you do today in the 21st century to what has been done by artists, you know, for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, really. And so in terms of seeking that catharsis from the audience and from the song, then people can only experience if they sense a truth in that song?
Oh, absolutely. A truth and just a gut connection, you know, a connection of the heart. When Tom Petty says, "Ow, here comes my girl," and you just, at that point, you just want to kick something or put your fist through a window, not in anger necessarily, but just enjoy just that slap your mama moment, you know. Slap your knee. My God, he's got it. You know? No, but it just feels so good, so free, so right. So, as I'm writing a song, sometimes when I get that sense, just as I'm working it out, then I know I'm onto something.
That was singer-songwriter David Egan, who's built a career rocking the blues. Egan's songwriting is heavily informed by opera. And by the way, that was his mother earlier, Jasmine Egan, singing an aria from Madame Butterfly. Coming up, gangsters almost run Ricky Lee Jones out of show business at the age of 8. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Before children's music was a genre on iTunes, heck, before there was iTunes, children listened to whatever their parents wanted to hear.
But for many artists, the songs they heard as children helped inspire them to make music for a living. Jazz banjo and guitar player Don Vappy can trace his musical career to one song.
It was my first record. It was Liza, Let the Clouds Roll Away. It was the flip side of Tisket a Tasket with Ella Fitzgerald, her big hit, you know. And it was Chick Webb's band. So I had this Decca record player, and I just played it over and over, man. And the sound would just, my spine would tingle. My whole body would shake because it just sounded so, I don't know, it's like I was there, you know? Liza, Let the Clouds Roll Away. It was an instrumental piece. Oh, man, it was like it started with Chick Webb on the drum. Boom, ba, dum, dum, boom, ba, dum. And the horns would come in. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-da, ba-da-ba, ba-da-da. Boom, 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 boom. And it's just killing the range. Gave me that record. It was old 78.
Uh-huh.
And A Tisket a Tasket was the hit.
Right.
In fact, I did a gig with Wes Anderson not long ago in Michigan, and they had a young girl, like in her teens, coming up to sing, and she decided to sing that in that arrangement of A Tisket a Tasket.
Really?
And I knew it from way, way back, so I was the only, like, jazz guy that knew this really. Oh, because I knew all the background, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, gee, I wonder where my basket can be. And I came up, so do we, so do we, so do we, so do we, so do we. Dun, 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 dun. You know,
I mean,
I knew the whole thing, man.
Right. Was it blue? Remember that?
Right. No, 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 no.
Was it red?
No, 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 no.
Was it green?
No, 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 no. Just a little yellow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was jazz banjo and guitar player Don Vappy, who traces his musical career to a single recording from the Chick Webb Orchestra. This is Music Inside Out, and we're talking with Louisiana musicians about some of the songs that influenced them as children. Jason Marsalis is a drummer and vibraphonist who seemed destined to spend his life playing jazz. His family is made up almost entirely of jazz musicians. Jason says he took to it from the very beginning.
It's funny, as a kid, I was into jazz records. That's what I actually enjoyed. I mean, I have memories of when my older brother Winton first started making his records. And it was a pretty big deal. And it wasn't even for career reasons. It wasn't that it was selling well and, oh, he's going to tour and this and that. It was just making a record was a big thing.
Sure.
And it was just something that felt like an event. First record would be played on the radio, and then I remember even when he came home to say, man, this is the new record we're working on. Like, you had musicians that were really believed in what they were doing and were working hard on trying to put the best music that they could put together at that time. Thank you. It was that music. It was also Miles Davis recordings, like Kind of Blue, Milestones, and Someday My Prince Will Come. So, you know, some John Coltrane recordings I might listen to, like Giant Steps.
Yeah.
I was really into that album a lot. So, but I was really into jazz more so than the popular music at the time, actually.
So there's Jason Marsalis with a juice box in one hand and, like, John Coltrane's Giant Steps in the other?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, well, actually, yeah, I think I had one of those old lunch pail boxes by then. Yeah, I think I had that then.
When drummer and vibraphonist Jason Marsalis was a kid, John Coltrane's Giant Steps was on high rotation.
Say, grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
This is vocalist Richard Jones singing On the Sunny Side of the Street. Perhaps Jones's most lasting gift to popular music is his daughter, Ricky Lee Jones, who recently moved to New Orleans. Richard Jones and his wife, Betty, introduced young Ricky to the American Songbook.
My father took me to an audition for a thing called the Lou King Show. The Lou King Show was the kid, you know, a chance for kids to be on TV. Gangsters.
In Phoenix?
Yeah. Oh, totally run by gangsters. And when we got to the Lou King Show and I auditioned and I sang On Sunny Side of the Street, Ragtime Cowboy Joe.
Okay.
Guy played the piano, went off a bit. I stayed with it. They were very impressed. And then they told my mother and father that they'd have to buy an insurance policy for me to be on the show.
Oh, Lord.
And they were just beside themselves, you know. And I remember being in the car and them saying, "We'll buy this insurance policy, Ricky, if you really want us to." And I said, "Not a chance." And I was eight, but I could already see how, and I really wanted to be, but I could see that they would have to work for months to pay for an insurance policy to be on the Lou King Show. And so that was my first toe into show business.
Okay, how does this cowboy song go?
Yeah, right. Oh, ho, he sings raggedy music to the cattle while he swings. back and forward in the saddle on a horse, a pretty good horse that is syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fellow's come, because the Western folks all know that he's a rootin' tootin' highfalutin' son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy, ragtime cowboy Joe.
I remember it.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember my father coming home when I was 7 or 8 and teaching me my funny Valentine, which was a bit of work. And I was struggling with you make me smile, because it changes to major.
Yes.
And I didn't understand it. I probably kept going, you make me smile, whatever it would be that would keep it in the minor. And I remember seeing the frustration on him and feeling really like I disappointed him. It took me, I'm going to say, 3 days to a week to understand the transition from minor to major. And at that point, he became proud of me. And I suppose somehow that his pride, because now he had, I don't know if this is a thing with men and children, but now he had some way he could relate to me. I had a personality. You know, there was the son, the brother. There was the oldest daughter. Who am I? So now I had something. And I think I loved singing, but I can't help but imagine that the fact that my father loved me singing help me somehow.
It makes all the difference.
I had that from my parents. I always thought it had to do with the vaudeville thing, that singing and show business was what we were meant to be. If we could get back into show business, that's where we were meant to be. Because I hear so many things about people's parents going, what are you singing for? Stop that singing. And that's the opposite of what I had.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I mean, My Funny Valentine is one of the, it's your version, is one of the best versions I've ever heard. It's on Girl at the at Her Volcano.
You're right.
And, I mean, do you sing it the same way every time, or?
Well, back then it was a very dramatic experience for me to sing that song. I don't know if that had to do with, you know, for my father I'm singing it, but also it's a very dramatic song. So, you know, I find a way to make it my own. Stay.
Ricky Lee Jones has recorded a number of songs she learned as a child, from jazz standards to the Beatles to Marvin Gaye's Trouble Man. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and we're talking with musicians about their childhoods. This is what John Cleary heard at home as a child in southern England. Of course he ended up in New Orleans.
My mum just would melt every time, you know, if Teddy Buckner's version of West End Blues would come on. No, she'd just stop whatever she was doing, close her eyes, and just start swooning. And that, well, you know, my family were really moved by music, and when you observe this stuff when you're a little kid. My musical taste came really from within my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in England in the 70s, growing up when I did, we had two music programs that came on.
Okay.
On the television. We only had three television channels. And at 7:20 on a Thursday, you could watch Top of the Pops, which would be the charts, chart hits. And that was the 70s. It was the era of glam rock, and I hated the Bay City Rollers and Gary Glitter and Sweet and all these daft bands. But there was another program that would come on called the Old Grey Whistle Test, which was, you know, more adult, sophisticated rock. And that would be guys doing 10-minute noodly guitar solos, and I didn't really like that either. And I was a guitar player. I started playing guitar when I was a kid. My dad showed me all his, you know, they'd have sessions down at the pub, and they'd all come back home afterwards, and there'd be music in the front room, everybody playing. And so that's how I learned to play.
Were there any songs in particular that you remember and you remember very well as songs that kind of helped nudge you into the direction of either playing guitar or of taking up music professionally?
Well, there was at school we had one record player and about five records. It was a little parochial village school called Collier's Green. I think there were about 30 students in the whole school.
Wow.
And they had a tiny little record, little box record player. And one of the records was Can't Buy Me Love. This would have been about 1967, I'm guessing, or 68, 69, something. So the record was already like 5 or 6 years old. But the guitar solo kind of rang a bell. And I was only a kid. I would have been about 7 or 8 years old.
The Beatles.
And then when I was about 14, punk rock happened, and
sure,
that was really exciting. Sex Pistols and The Damned and The Clash, and me and my mates would bunk off school and get on the bus to Hastings and go and see The Stranglers.
We came across the West Sea. We didn't have much idea of the kind of climate waiting. Used our hands for guidance, like the children of a preacher, like a dry tree seeking water, or a daughter, nice and sleazy, does it every time.
Every punk gig, they would have a reggae band. All of a sudden, there's this explosion in great reggae music. So we got to see these hit bands that were coming over from Jamaica. And that's still one of my big passions. When I'm relaxing, I listen to Caribbean reggae music.
John Cleary's musical roots are all over the place, from early jazz to punk to reggae artists like Burning Spear. We're talking with musicians about the songs that influenced them as children. And this brings us to the only song in our show this week that has never been released commercially. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Toussaint.
I had a cousin named Dolores. She was a very fine girl, much older than I, and she had a boyfriend named Sammy, and he used to come over and he played a little simple.
Thank you.
that's called Dolores' Boyfriend. I was 9 when she used to come. He used to come by and he'd play that.
The great Alan Toussaint. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Melissa McLean, Kayla Green, and Jason Rhine. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. To hear complete interviews with any or all of our guests, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, the Arts Council New Orleans, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.